And Mr. Harris?
Our next speaker is going to be Mike Godwin from our staff. And while Mike is coming up and getting ready, I think Dominic mentioned it, but I want to reiterate it that at the last board meeting when we were doing strategic planning, that you all asked for more bite-sized pieces of program updates. So this, in essence, constitutes the first one, and that is for our stormwater program. Item 12, status report for the City of Salinas Municipal Stormwater Discharges. And Mike is going to be presenting this. This is an update on the City of Salinas progress on implementing their Phase 1 Municipal Stormwater Permit. After Mike's presentation, Gary Peterson with the City of Salinas will provide comments on the City's accomplishments implementing the permit. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Good afternoon, board members. My name is Mike Godwin. I'm an engineering geologist with the Stormwater Unit, and as Ken said, an update on the City of Salinas Phase 1 permit. I want to present their accomplishments so far. Salinas is the only Phase 1 MS4 permit municipality in the Central Coast region, and they have a population of about 160,000 people. The last board update we gave you was in July 2013. And so on this one, this update, I want to discuss the past permit, the staff report discussed past permit violations and deficiencies during the last audit, which is December 2014. But with this presentation, I want to emphasize the accomplishments the city has made with their continuing gains in stormwater quality improvements. These items here, these program elements, it's not a comprehensive list, but it's a portion of the city's permit requirements. And these are the program elements that have the most potential to improve stormwater quality. They are illicit discharge detection and elimination, business inventory and inspections, stormwater monitoring and watershed monitoring, trash reduction program, and post-construction requirements. In the following slides, I'll show examples of how the city's approach to managing these different aspects of the permit programs. So this slide shows an example of how the city manages their information for its illicit discharge and elimination program. The city is divided into primary watersheds, and here's continuing the concepts that Dominic had discussed. Their primary watersheds are shown in these muted colors. Each primary watershed is comprised of smaller urban catchments that are tributary to a larger primary outfall. And in these and the following slides, the red star locates Salinas City Hall. The division of these watershed of the city into these watersheds enhances the planning efficiencies for implementing the illicit discharge detection and elimination program, as well as their other program elements that will follow. The map on the left shows the urban stormwater watersheds with the city's interpretation outlined in red, where the illicit discharges will most likely occur. However, on the map on the right shows the locations of 60 reported illicit discharges which occurred over the past year. Maps were generated in part using the city's information from illicit discharge detection and elimination program, and the information along with the entire city's stormwater system is mapped and georeferenced in the city's information and data management system called TrackIt. Moving forward with these maps, the city will be able to better understand where discharges occur and how to better manage them. On these two maps, I've presented a portion of their business inventory and inspection program. They represent an example of the inventory of inspections in commercial and industrial facilities. And, you know, they've mapped about over 1,200 different businesses. And, again, this is just an example. The map on the left shows where industrial inspections have taken place by business type. The map on the right shows locations of commercial businesses by type as well. And on this one, the orange flags are commercial food enterprises. There's over 400 dots on that map. The city system Trackit is used to map out business by location and type, and is used to schedule and manage stormwater permit inspections at these inventory businesses. So these next maps, and this gets into the stormwater, the meat of the stormwater. We've got stormwater monitoring outfalls and catchment monitoring outfalls. The map on the left shows the municipal outfall stormwater monitoring locations citywide. The map on the right shows locations of the catchment pilot project watershed monitoring. And these are the tributaries to the primary watershed shown in the previous slides. The purpose of the Urban Catchment Pilot Project watershed monitoring is to characterize the stormwater discharge quality from the urban environments in order to gauge the effectiveness of the stormwater BMPs installed by the city. And because of the requirements in the city's permit, such as this catchment pilot project monitoring program, the city is further along in implementing a watershed-based approach to stormwater management compared with the phase two permittees in the region. Preliminary trends in the stormwater monitoring of these catchment pilot projects, as well as the stormwater monitoring outfalls, is summarized in attachment 4 of the staff report. As Dominic pointed out in his presentation about a watershed approach to stormwater management, the catchment pilot project will be an iterative process for the city to make watershed-based decisions about the BMPs that are most effective at improving water quality. And over time, with the successful BMPs can be identified in the catchment pilot project, and those effective BMPs will be distributed throughout the city over. These two slides represent a portion of the city's trash reduction program efforts. They also represent the other aspects of their Trackit data management and software program. There's many parts to their trash reduction program, and as I said, these are only just two aspects of it. The figure on the left shows the city's storm drain structures, but these does not include the underground features. These dots also correspond roughly with many of the placarded storm drains inlets throughout the city to alert people not to put trash in the storm drains. The shaded areas on the left map are the storm drain maintenance districts, which are within the primary urban watersheds. The storm drain structures are identified for inspections, maintenance, and cleaning. And the figure on the right is an example of their commercial street sweeping routes for the city. And the map represents only a fraction of all the streets that are cleaned on a regular basis. And the color-coded areas are for the street sweeping schedules based on days of the week. Trackit is used for the trash reduction program to plan and schedule the work and to record the quantities of trash removed during the storm drain maintenance or the street sweeping. With their storm drain maintenance and street sweeping efforts and the records that they have, they can generate trash removal rates, and the city can easily schedule their efforts to focus on the highest trash production areas and achieve the best results in removing the debris from urban watersheds. post-construction requirements. This slide shows the document title pages of the two programs implemented by the city for post-construction stormwater requirements. The stormwater development standards on the left and the stormwater standard plans on the right have been adopted by the city and are both now available on the city's website. Bioretention and green street standards were developed through the low impact development initiative and through a grant from CASCA. These documents are available to all municipalities in the Central Coast region who desire to adopt them for their own use. And the engineering drawings that are in the stormwater standard plans are available in native file formats to facilitate use in design and plan documents. The stormwater standard plans are of great importance since they are the first green street specifications in the Central Coast region and are a model for other municipalities to follow. The similar sets of standards have been adopted by Gonzales, King City, and Soledad. Los Angeles is the only other municipality in the state other than the four municipalities here in our region that have adopted standards such as this. So it shows that the four communities are ahead of the curve here. These two documents represent significant stormwater program milestones for the city, and they are important because the documents will be used to plan and design the development procedures to protect riparian corridors, guide infill development and redevelopment, and provide a smart growth guidance in all developments in their future growth area. Which leads to this slide showing the future growth areas. This slide also shows the present city footprint, the major streams, and in gray, the future growth areas. The stormwater development standards will be a foundation for smart growth in approximately 2,400 acres of land designated for future growth. As a staff member of the board, I'm excited about participating in this phase of the city's growth and working with the city on projects that will show a high potential for water resources enhancement and protection. And in conclusion, the integration of the different stormwater requirements by the city enables it to more easily manage and implement their permit programs. And board staff will continue to work with the city to look at efficiencies in implementing their permit. The Phase 1 MS4 permit structure establishes a foundation for a watershed-based approach to manage the city's stormwater. And the city's Phase 1 MS4 permit is a leading example of how the Phase 2 municipalities in the region can integrate smart growth and water resource management. Is there any questions? I'll be happy to.
Thank you. Mike?
Just looking at the staff report, on the page 7 of the staff report, permit section P, it essentially says that from 2013 to 2015, the water quality in the streams in the urban watershed monitoring program exhibits decreasing quality, and the urban catchment action level pilot project exhibit static to decreasing water quality. Is that a function of the same thing we're seeing in rural areas with the decrease of flow? You sometimes find an increase of concentration, or what's that about? Because this seems like an overall positive report of progress made, but you're talking about decreasing water quality or static to decreasing. Is that just relative to the drought and flow?
I believe so. And the city, I believe they started their more detailed monitoring in 2012, late 2012. So we only have about 2 years of data to really look at. And as you point out, it's during low flow times. It's also some of those sampling points are also the downstream end of a lot of these watersheds. So it's picking up a lot of noise from other sources that may not be well defined.
And we have a speaker card for the city of Salinas. But before that, do we any question?
I do have a question. Yes, I do, if I could.
Sure.
No mention of the US EPA's audit?
I provided that in the staff report, and it lists their deficiencies. The EPA mentioned that they had potential violations.
There's 12.
Pardon?
There's 12 potential permit violations.
Yes.
So, you know, I remember we have visited this permit, the board has, there have been other board members here, going back over 10 years. And we've had issues with Salinas' ability to effectively implement, you know, its stormwater permit. So I don't recall if we've had as many as 12 potential permit violations in the past. I'm just want to know, how can we encourage them, leverage them to do better? It seems like giving them notices of violation, but nothing is, we haven't done anything further than that.
Yes, the probably half or so of those permit violations or potential violations that the EPA found in 2014 audit are continuing problems that were identified in the 2013 audit. And Mr. Peterson with the city will be better able to respond to how they are going to change their programs to do better. And I recognize that based on the EPA's audit, yes, there are some continuing problems. They are improving slowly but surely, and that'll be part of my effort to be deeply involved with the city and their permit requirements and seeing that these violations are or potential violations are addressed.
I'll hold any more comments till Mr. Peterson comes up, because I do remember he spoke to us before, and I think it was maybe you had just been brought into this, into supervising this program the day before you last spoke to us, if I'm not mistaken. So is that right, Mike?
Yeah. Yeah. That was.
I mean, you were on the hot seat then, but now you've had.
From the airport to suddenly the stormwater system.
Yeah, the stormwater,
exactly.
Right. That was it.
From,
so,
from airplanes to stormwater.
So now that he's well seasoned supervising the program, maybe we'll have a chance to talk with him. But, Mr. Chair, that was my only question.
Yeah, yeah. And just before you speak, Dr. Hunter had, I think, another question. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that staff report. Just a follow-up to Mr. Young's question about the EPA inspection. I'm just curious, does the EPA inspect as a regular or as a routine part of their oversight? Do they inspect Phase 1 permitted municipalities? And if not, what triggered EPA 2013 inspection, and then did that trigger the follow-up? Did they give them a specified set of recommendations and a timeline to take corrective action? What's that process? How does that process get driven?
Well, it is a recurring it happens every year. There's an opportunity to have EPA come into our region and perform some inspections. It helps reduce our overall workload, but they do it independently, and they actually hire contractors typically. I think in this case they had the contractors from PG Environmental, plus there was a couple of EPA staffers as well, and then we ride along, so we get to kind of perform our own inspection along with them. The EPA's prioritization for that, I can't really give you much detail on. I know that it it does take into account some of the feedback we give them on what we think are where we could use the assistance. I know Phil Hammer has supervised this. He supervised this unit longer than I did, and he has a little more familiarity with that process. So the other thing I should mention about the EPA's conclusion that there are violations or potential violations, they also have the option of pursuing those and some through some enforcement strategy. And, of course, they can coordinate with us. They can proceed independently. But they've indicated they aren't going to pursue those, I think, at this time. Is that correct? I think that's the status still. And I think they view the contribution as having outlined and identified these recurring issues at the city and helping the region target, you know, the problems that seem to be continuing. So I do think Mr. Peterson is probably the best person to kind of describe what their response to those particular criticisms are from EPA.
All right. And we have allocated 10 minutes for Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Chair and board members. It's good to be here again. I have been here since the first time to, again, report on progress that we're making. We are aware that there is continues to be work that needs to be done. We did provide a rather lengthy response to the EPA audit. We do challenge some of the findings and feel like a lot of that was understanding record-keeping and processes. We have not heard back, but we do understand that we have work to do. And that's what I want to report to you about. We have made significant progress. I think about how far we have come from when I took this over, when we stood in a purely oppositional position to this permit, to where we have moved clearly to one of a cooperation and collaboration. I think the most important thing that I would say to you today is that last November, our constituents voted a 1 cent sales tax in the city of Salinas. And for the first time, beginning this July, we have resources. All of the improvements that we did before, all of the work that we did before was based on a very minimal staffing, very minimal resources. The first thing we did on July 1st was reorganize the Public Works Department, creating a separate division focused on waste, water, and energy. In that unit, the stormwater permit will, for the first time, reside with one person having oversight over the many components. It's a strategic move. It is the strategies that have been asked for and requested for some time, and this is the first time we're able to do that. We're also advancing technology in a way that and utilizing that in ways that we haven't been able to do before. I sat in on a meeting yesterday where we're programming our street sweeping routes. Completely differently based on data, based on trash load, so that we do figure out and work out ahead, you know, where are the best places to sweep to reduce that load. And also in a city, and it is not as relevant to the water piece of it, but in a city when you take up sweeping, you also have cars and you have all sorts of things you have to deal with. But the focus is getting better at what we do. The entire focus of the consolidation of stormwater activities is to do that. We've also been very active on stormwater in the LID processes. We do very much look forward to the work that is being done in LIDs and the measurement. We feel personally that it's been very challenging, as others have reported, to do this work and not be able to get quite yet a grip on where the progress is being made, where we can be most effective, because we'll always be dealing with constrained resources, and that sort of data will be very helpful for us for getting it right and cleaning water. We are doing a lot of work around the water sampling. We're as concerned in the report that shows with all the work we've done that we're not seeing an increase in water quality, but we think there's a lot of factors, the drought being one of them. So we remain committed to staffing, to programmatic training, to staff training, and a complete reorganization to be more effective on how we manage the stormwater piece. So the other part of it for us in Salinas is we are your largest city. We are the largest city between San Jose and Oxnard. We have stepped into some roles on a regional basis around water projects, water management, that we think are extremely critical. We do see stormwater as an asset and as a possibility for reuse. You will hear later today with Paul Sciutto and the Pollution Control Agency about Pure Water Monterey. We are an integral party of that. We have, right off the start, we have two of the major sources that will be used for recycling, which is our effluent, but also our produce wash water. We are in the midst of constructing a permanent piece of infrastructure now that will make the produce wash water available for recycling with just a turn of a valve, and we did not have that before. And the next up, we're in design for a stormwater shunt that will give us the possibility of access to 25% of our city's stormwater to put that either into recycling through the same process or into storage in what were our former treatment ponds, that we're looking at changing those uses to make water available. And this is to provide water for the CSIP project, the Castroville Seawater Intrusion Project, and, of course, Watsonville spoke of it today, not a lot of other talk, but in the Salinas Valley, that's central to our survival is finding other sources of water. So Salinas has taken a significant role in that, worked at the table for 2 years in a collaborative process that brought the Monterey Peninsula and the Salinas Valley together in a cooperative way, which is sort of a landmark piece of work that we did. These are not people who normally work together. It's been very successful. So we got through that, and we're making great headway, which you'll hear more about today. And then groundwater sustainability at SGMA came our way. The city of Salinas is also involved in that process. We realized that no single agency exists in our area that would satisfy everyone in their ability to manage the Groundwater Sustainability Act. So we stepped up and partnered with the agricultural industry, a number of other partners, to identify a facilitator that will work in a large multi-stakeholder process that will bring everyone to the table. Because in Monterey County, it does mean the disadvantaged communities. It means it means the environmental communities. It means the Bay. It means the farmers. So we have been driving that process with a small consortium of people. We acquired the services of a very skilled facilitator in that area. First kickoff meeting was last week. Stakeholder interviews are underway. So we're stepping up as Salinas, taking on a major role. What we're doing is recognizing that water is a system that does not acknowledge political boundaries. We have to live with where water goes and what it wants to do, and we need to figure out how to form the partnerships and the collaborations that will create the best benefit for all of us. We think in Salinas, one of the big pieces for us is the recycling of the stormwater, and to look at what that means as a potential. And we know we're out on the edge on that, but I think that's where we need to be. I also want to talk about Carr Lake, where we're working with folks right in the middle of Salinas, the old dry lake, and we're working with folks who are actively pursuing the acquisition of properties so that we can use Carr Lake for recreational areas, for water treatment, to improve habitat. What we talk a lot about is the restoration of riparian habitat for Natividad and Gavilan Creeks that run through there that then hit the reclamation ditches. So we're very active on that. The one other thing I would add is that Salinas has taken on the largest energy retrofit project, in one of the largest ones in California, but certainly in the Central Coast, with 4 megawatts of solar energy, 6,000 streetlights being replaced, 2,000 interior lights. But the nexus of this is that a lot of the energy that we're producing is going to be used to treat and move water. So we're very active on that front. Those projects are moving forward. 17-acre solar farms being built on an old wastewater treatment site today, even as I speak to you. So we're very active on those. We believe Salinas has a very important role in leading in the Central Coast area, both on compliance with our plan, although I wish I had a phase 2 plan. We're not going to phase 1 plan. So we'll work with that. But we're trying to stay ahead of that. We're trying to lead. We're very interested in sharing information, collaborating, and working. And we are committed to improving our outcomes on stormwater and ultimately meeting the goal of the permit, which we understand in an unambivalent way is to produce clean water. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Well, I think you have a lot going, and you're in the city. You mentioned moving water, which, 80% of energy goes in moving water. It's from what standpoint in terms of sewer lift stations or?
So with solar energy, the idea is the closer you generate it to the use, the better. So as we were looking at how to do this, the Monterey Water Pollution Control Agency's primary lift station for all of the Salinas effluent, which is 60% of the intake, is adjacent to the area where we put the solar. It is also the intake point for our stormwater, eventual stormwater capture for recycling, and also the entry point for the produce wash water that we were recycling. So we were able to put together an agreement with PCA to share the savings in solar to move that water and reduce the cost of recycling.
Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate it. Well, thank you. So this terminates this particular item 12.
I just have a comment, if I could, to staff.
Sure.
If you don't mind. I'm not real happy with what I have seen. I don't know what to do about it.
I'm sorry? About what?
I'm not happy of what I perceive to be our response to the Salinas' inability to effectively implement its stormwater permit. And I'm looking at the 12 potential permit violations.
Mm-hmm.
I see from the time frame that was laid out on the back side of the cover report, they've had four or five other notices of violations in the past. I don't know whether any of these 12 are just repetitions of prior violations notices. Had this discussion before. I understand they've had staffing constraints. I do appreciate all of that. And I'm hopeful that they're having a dedicated person be able to manage this from now on. I hope that is going to make a difference. I don't know. I don't know enough about this to start peeling away the layers so that when we look at this again in a few years that we don't have this repeating itself.
So I am not the enforcement officer, and so, there's a whole part of the organization I do not see most of the time. Michael is on vacation. Lisa is here acting for Michael, so she can carry that back to Michael. I will tell you that I know the enforcement team prioritizes what enforcement actions they take based on a number of factors. Michael gets back, I'll have to ask him what he can and cannot share with you in terms of any activities that are ongoing or why this hasn't happened with the city of Salinas. So I will look into it and try to get you as much of an answer as I possibly can.
But maybe, dovetailing a little bit on what Mr. Young said, putting aside the enforcement part, which is what are the consequences, I think from my view is lessons learned on each of those and action steps to prevent this from happening again. So right now, I'm putting aside the regulatory consequences of potential violation. But if we have action steps saying, all right, this particular item, what can we do in the future to prevent? And maybe I'm articulating slightly differently what Mr. Young is saying, but I would tend to concur with his view there is like, okay, something happened, so what do we do to improve in the future?
But maybe what I could suggest is, because it's really hard to, I think, discuss this in a meaningful way here at the board meeting, is I would offer to Mr. Young and is a set up a discussion with staff with you separately, so that we clearly understand what your concerns are, and we'll bring in whoever we need to try and answer your questions or come to some sort of resolution regarding your concerns. I don't think we can do that today.
Well, and that's part of my frustration that I'm trying to tell you, is that I don't have all the facts. I can't peel the layers away, and we got to go back in time and look at this. And you know, hear me out. I'm not suggesting, you know, enforcement is the only thing on the table. I think Dr. Wolf correctly pointed out my concern is putting enforcement aside. How do we stop this, what I think might be repetition of similar violations in the past? That's what concerns me. And because we've had this discussion before, and, you know, here almost as an irony, number six, the city had not developed or implemented a progressive enforcement response plan to address illicit discharges as required under the permit. Do we have any progressive response plan when we see this stuff going on? I don't know.
Yeah, let me try to provide a little insight into this. The stormwater unit at the water board put a considerable effort into developing that permit for Salinas, and almost immediately the staff person assigned to that was unavailable to implement the permit. It was put on, among other things, the Salinas River channel maintenance issues, and there was a diversion of resources from implementing the permit. So we haven't provided the level of oversight and implementation that we expected to provide. I would suspect that we would have probably gotten farther along in our solution to this problem, which seems to be that the city has communication problems between different components of its operation. There are people in the field who don't quite know how to report back on what they're finding in their inspections of industrial stormwater discharges, for example. So I think with the new kind of organization of our unit and having Mike Godwin available to oversee this permit, I think we're going to see some of those issues resolved fairly quickly. I mean, we can't predict the city's success in solving those, but we can predict that we'll be working with the city more consistently than we have in the past. So that's one thing. The other thing, as an item to just provide you an update and a kind of informational item on the status of this permit, we thought that the big picture, the real message, is the considerable progress that they've made. Yes, they still have work to do, but given where we were when we adopted the permit and the situation they were in, and today, that is the take home, that they've made great strides. They're in a good position to improve on some of these other areas, which frankly are probably relatively minor compared to, say, the enormous benefit of having green street standards for the future growth area. So we use our judgment and our resources in the most strategic way we can. And while we are also bothered and concerned about continuing violations, I think we're in a better position to address them now. And we feel like overall we aren't misrepresenting by presenting you some of their accomplishments and in lieu of emphasizing these continued deficiencies.
And Dr. Hunter and then Mr. Johnston had questions.
I understand Mr. Young's comments, and I think probably one of my very first staff board meetings was in the context of the Salinas Phase 1 permit. But, you know, I was stunned by the EPA report, which is why I asked the question, you know, how are those triggered? And I did see some repetition, or at least what appeared to be inability maybe to really coordinate what is the left hand doing, what is the right hand doing. I mean, I saw a lot of disconnects that were identified in the EPA review. At the same time, what I did see and I think what was stated by the city, that, you know, they started out in a very adversarial response. When we first heard about the city's approach to this, we did not hear from the technical side of it. We heard from the legal standing. And that was a pretty remarkable experience, in my view. It was quite stunning to have the city's attorney be the main spokesperson for how they would not implement the stormwater permit, all the reasons why they could not. So from thinking back to that point, they have come a huge way along the path of realizing that this is, in fact, beneficial for many things that they're trying to manage within the city, including now water resources, protecting and conserving their water resources. What does encourage me, though, and where I might stand in a slightly different position, Mr. Young, is in the summary, if you look in the summary and you get into that little bit finer grain, and we are mid-permit, so I took that as a, okay, this is a heads up. This is what we're going to be looking for when we see that permit renewal. There were some interesting things that got, you know, kind of a little more light, a little more detail, a little more understanding. Probably one of the more impressive things I saw was that the city is shifting its staffing around. That's huge. That is no small thing to reassign, redefine tasks linked specifically to required outcomes, and shifting away from what probably were very effective partnerships with private industry, private operations requiring some type of stormwater monitoring, shifting those properly back to the private sector and allowing the city to use its staffing and resources to assure that they are meeting their permit requirements, and putting those private operations on notice. This is your responsibility. The city is no longer going to be able to do that. That probably worked really well for those private operators, but that didn't get the city where it needed to be. So I see those kinds of turning points as recognition of what is the best and highest use of your own staff, your own expertise, your own resources, and how much can the city, underwrite, if you will, indirectly, some of the cost of doing business in the city. So those are hard choices and hard shifts to make at the same time as, protecting the integrity of that business, the municipality relationship with its business operations within the city limits. So, I think there's continuous change going on. It is going in the right direction. Frankly, I'm grateful that EPA gives us the backup, and as Dominic said, it was right along. So they have a lot of experience. They've seen these phase ones in throughout the country. We have one. So that adds an additional set of an additional way of achieving perspective on this. And so I'm looking at the, permit renewal point and staff recommendations at that point, and I would expect that if we see these particular potential violations that have been identified, that I expect that the enforcement staff will consider what are our options. And I'm guessing we'll hear some recommendations at that point. But that would be the only place I differ with you, Mr. Young, is I do see the type of change, the type of response is becoming more substantive. I think it's becoming more realistic.
I hope so. I just looked through the list of violations, and these are permit requirements that are pretty black and white. And I don't see much of a legitimate excuse for some of them to not have been taken care of. But I agree with you. We have a much better presentation by Mr. Peterson than we had early on, when we did have attorneys approaching us and challenging us. And I hope it is. There's more substance than just form to the presentation. I do see that there's a shift going on. I'm hopeful. Well, hopefully you and I will still be on the board so we can see the fruits of our comments.
Okay? I hope so.
Mr. Johnston.
Well, listening to this, while I mean, I get the fact that, of course, what really drives things is not how nice a presentation people make to us, but what they actually do in the real world. And I also get the fact that it's not the region's job to implement the permit. It's the permittee's job. You know, at the same time, it's a fact of life that there is a difference between, you know, a city like Salinas and a city like Monterey or Santa Barbara in terms of resources. That's just reality. You know, I had a conversation we do briefings for the board members a couple at a time so that we don't break the rules with staff on items that are going to come up. And one of my questions in the briefing on this item to the staff who have been working on it was, give me a sense of kind of what's going on with Salinas. Is, you know, my first contact when I was a brand new board member was the hearing in the Salinas City Council chambers, where essentially at that point, the city was saying, give us more time, give us more time. And the staff was saying, they've had all the time that they need, just pass the permit, you know. And we decided to give them more time. There was what was actually the beginning of a process of the staff and the city working together. So my question to staff in this briefing was, well, so give me a sense of trajectory here, you know, because that first hearing, essentially, Salinas was clueless on, at least on that day, as to, you know, and they said, you know, we think they've moved from, you know, oppositional to clueless to, you know, really trying to do it to now we really see, you know, implementation going on, not always on time. You know, but we see the actual concrete steps that's gonna have real results. We see resources being put in. We see changes being made in their systems, and to a certain extent, you know, I have to rely on that input from staff, and because of course our concern is ultimately, you know, how effectively and how rapidly can we move towards water quality improvements? And that's our brief here. You know, so the sense I was getting from staff is that there really has been a tracking progression of moving towards really resolving the fundamental structural problems that were preventing this program from operating effectively. So, that's just my two cents.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. And Mayor Delgado?
Thank you. On page 6 of the staff report, it mentions that data indicates improved stormwater quality due in part to inspections and public education and outreach. So do we really have data that indicates improvements in stormwater quality because of outreach and education?
The city has been doing more focused investigations in those urban catchment pilot project watersheds or catchments. And part of that is a streamside trash assessment, where they monitor the amount of trash in a seasonally on a seasonal basis, a transect. and they're showing improvements and less trash there. Again, as Michael Johnson pointed out earlier, that's possibly and quite probably an artifact of being lower water flows during drought period. But they are showing decreases in trash accumulation on the stream prism, and in part that's due to public outreach in high priority neighborhoods where they see more trash generation on the street or illegal dumping along the stream bank, and so they're actually pursuing some of the illegal dumping as well. So these concepts, although they're not really quantifiable, they are showing improvements in the actual amount of trash that's accumulated in these streams. And I believe it's in the, I guess they're the Gavilan Creek and the Natividad and channelized sections, but not completely concrete channelized sections that they're making these observations in these pilot watersheds. I think more data, more rainfall, better give us an idea of the true effectiveness of it, though, over time.
So the data shows less trash, at least in the short run, but we don't know why, and we're hoping in part it's due to the outreach.
Outreach, and, of course, the programs that they're implementing, you know, and focused efforts in these high priority areas where they know that a lot of trash is generated by the public on the streets. They're making an effort to clean up those areas more frequently.
I know they have highly popular creek cleanups, and I think that's a good way for education. If they're getting hundreds of people to clean up the creeks, those are hundreds of people that are less likely to be throwing their trash in the creek. So there's probably some correlation there. That's great. Also, yeah, on page 6, it mentions that the city uses the TRAKIT, T-R-A-K-I-T system, to monitor illicit discharges. But in the EPA letter, it says that the city had not developed an information management system to track illicit discharges. So
where's
can you help
discrepancy?
Me out?
and I think that's what Dominic had pointed out also, is that there is some communication disconnect within the city personnel, and I believe the folks that were interviewed by the EPA or participated in their audit were not the same people that were responsible for implementing the program and, say, inputting the data. And that was prior to the city consolidating their environmental programs under one department. And I'm sure Gary could answer this, but how, you know, as the program is as the personnel are consolidated into one department, everyone's going to know that they have to report and track and document their efforts in these inspections, for instance, or the illicit discharge program. I mean, I pulled these figures out of their annual report. They have a list of reported spills. They have a map generated showing the dots on the map. I can't tell you exactly why the EPA reported as a permit violation that these programs aren't in place. They're obviously doing something, and I wanted to stress in this presentation that they have the foundation in place. They have the parts. They've got to put these parts together in a better fashion to where everybody in their environmental department can accurately report and document what's going on and produce the information that we're looking at that shows that they are meeting the permit requirements.
All right, thank you. On page 7, it talks about 5.5 acres of impervious surfaces that were either already or soon to be installed. Do you have a breakdown of how much have been installed in that 5.5 acres? Is it 50-50, and how much is going to in the future?
Actually, when I was writing that report, I looked at Google Earth and saw that they're actually starting their construction, and this is in the southeast portion of the city along
can't remember if it's the Reclamation Ditch or Alisal Creek. And at that point, you know, there's fresh grading. They're probably a little bit farther along at this point. It's going to be pervious pavements, underground or subgrade storage structures, retention structures to manage peak flow and then also have infiltration, and then also on the surface with bioretention swales. Probably Gary or Walter Grant could tell you a little bit on the progress on those, but those were two larger commercial projects that were going to be installed.
All right, so the 5.5 acres is sort of in one area, in one period of development that's going on.
Yeah, two separate projects. They were to be started at about the same time.
Good. I'll follow up with Gary because I think I'd like to visit those. My last question is also on page 7 where it talks about an 11% decline in integrated or landscape management practices with contracted landscaping services and a decrease in water quality from 2013 to 2015 in the monitoring program. And I guess I can understand that the latter might be due to less water and more drought. So, drought, therefore less water. But the 11% decline with contracted landscaping services, what would be the mechanism to reverse that?
The city has a part one is their tracking system, and the different departments that use chemicals, whether pesticides, herbicides, or fertilizers, in their city landscape maintenance programs, they track the volumes applied and the frequency and also the precursor to rain events. And according to manufacturers' instructions, for instance, you don't apply certain chemicals, 4 days within the predicted rainfall period. And that's where those numbers come from, is that the landscape, the contractors that are applying the chemicals were applying them too soon to a predicted rainfall event. And this, and in part, that is the city's training program to instruct the folks on proper use of the chemicals, both volumes and frequency and, of course, preceding rain events. And the city departments that are doing this, they showed a 6 to 35% increase. So they're paying attention to when they're applying and also proper amounts, whereas the contracted folks, they need more. They actually could show that, at least based on the numbers, that the training was actually working to affect the behavior of the city staff, but the contractors need more work.
And our private landscape services, we required to follow the same time frames?
These are private companies that are contracted by the city to do work on public lands.
Right, but if they were contracted by a private company on private land, would those restrictions, do those apply as far as 4 days?
Conceptually, yes, but it's difficult for the city to enforce those.
Sure,
mechanisms.
Sure, I'm just wondering. Because when you mentioned earlier that it's difficult for existing urbanized areas to improve because we're not going to require them to retrofit existing cities. This is an area where it applies across the board, you're telling me, to private property and to government city contracted service providers. And so I would think there'd be some exchange if we were doing a better job with our contracted landscapers from the city's perspective, that would transfer over to when those contractors are working on other contracts outside of city purview. And there would be one example where we would have some impact on existing urbanization by better implementation of this. So I guess your answer probably would be better training on the city side of their contracted service providers. Okay. So my comment after all of this is, I think everyone agrees that the trajectory is in the right direction. And when is the next time that we would have such a meeting as today to review this? Is it 2 years, 5 years?
It's really, I guess, Mr. Harris can advise me, but I think that's your prerogative when to request it. And
he's correct. Anytime you want.
So I would think that for our board to match our comfort or discomfort level, we would just request that this come back at an appropriate time. And sooner if we're more uncomfortable, and later if we're comfortable.
Well, maybe we need to let an El Nino year go by, and then we revisit and see where we are.
Okay, and I'll lastly say I appreciate, like elders have, the progress that you've made from a couple years ago when we had that marathon stormwater meeting in your council chambers to what we're getting today. You know, not all's rosy, but it seems like we're in a different landscape now, and I appreciate that. It's a lot of work. I know it's slow to make the gears of a large city change in this way, and I hope that the new sales tax measure expedites the pace. Thank you very much for your work.
All right, so thank you. So this should wrap up item 12. Thank you, staff, and thank you for the city. Mr. Harris?
So we have a dilemma. With my best efforts to try and manage the agenda and time, I clearly underestimated the amount of interest in these two items. As Dr. Wolf and I had spoke earlier, we have been trying to manage multiple people's schedules to get everybody in and out at a reasonable amount of time, and some of our speakers have other commitments. The Monterey Regional Pollution Control Agency general manager is due here at 1:30 because he has a 3 o'clock meeting with Assemblymember Alejo. And so is your husband's office here in Watsonville or is it in Salinas? Oh, okay. Okay, so that means you get 5 minutes for lunch. So I'm not quite sure how to do this. He's not here. I am trying to text him to figure out how much leeway. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so he says he needs to leave by 2:30. So I think we can take 30 minutes and get him in and out of here at 2:30 then.
Let's do 30 minutes.
But no longer than 30 minutes. We've got to be back here at 5 till.
Yeah, and also for the rest of the board to know, one of the other little challenges we had is that inadvertently this room was not available for us tomorrow. You know, we had scheduled these 2 days, and there was a schedule mistake made, not from our part, so we basically could not even contemplate having a half a day tomorrow, so that's why we're trying to put everything in one day. So sorry for the inconvenience, everyone.
So I just need to announce closed session. I'll try and blow through it in 30 minutes. And we'll be closed session is item 19, and we'll be discussing 12, 13, and 14.
Thank you, counsel.
So 1:55?
Yes, Mr. Harris.